The Calder Centre for International Refugee Law at the University of New South Wales released a policy paper this week called Climate Change, Disasters and Mobility, a Roadmap for Australian Action. The paper looks at the growing problem of displacement of people in the Pacific region due to climate change, but it also looks at the economic impact of COVID-19 on tourism-dependent economies. And the paper calls for Australia to increase its permanent intake of migrants from Pacific islands. With many Pacific economies struggling and Australia's migration drastically reduced due to the COVID-19 pandemic, is migration from the largely COVID-free Pacific islands the solution for both sets of problems? We're going to get the perspective now of Audrey Amua, the Deputy Director General of the Pacific Community. Audrey is based in Fiji. She works with Pacific leaders to improve health and development outcomes across the region and is described as a leader, diplomat, and Pacific champion. Welcome to the program, Audrey.
Thank you very much.
And we're also joined by Jonathan Pryke, Director of the Lowy Institute's Pacific Islands Program. Jonathan co-authored the Calder Centre policy briefing. Welcome, Jonathan. Audrey, if I could start with you, Fiji's one of only a handful of nations that's COVID-free at the moment. No new cases and only a total of 33 cases. A great achievement, but it's come at a massive cost to the Fijian economy. What has the impact of COVID-19 been in Fiji?
Bula vinaka to all of you, and thank you for the invitation to be with you today. Fiji, in your introductory remarks, you've made note that the Pacific is reasonably COVID-free. Fiji has been had a number of cases. You know, we are beginning to see now the impact of early border closures, the closure of course, our big tourism market. We don't have any of our regional airlines operating. And subsequently, of course, as much as we have always taken the perspective that our remoteness has been our biggest development challenge, I have to say during COVID, it has been our greatest advantage. And our remoteness has really delivered us, a result around managing the pandemic. Economically, for Fiji, of course, we are beginning to see now a real downturn in the economy. We have a substantial amount of our workforce now unemployed. Jonathan has quoted in several sessions earlier that, you know, we are likely to see a 25% downturn on the economy and so forth. But this is, of course, not just Fiji. It is for many tourism-reliant economies across the region.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, obviously massive impact compared to, you know, I mean, the Chinese economy is going to grow this year. The Australian economy is going to contract, but only by, you know, a handful of percent. You're talking about a contraction of almost a quarter.
Yeah, it's fairly substantial. You know, of course, the region, as many of you know who work in the development space, recognise that the Pacific is hugely reliant, of course, on donor contributions and support from our development partners. And I guess the emerging risk for us is that, given the state of the economy for many of our countries, that their predicament and our deeper reliance on donor contributions will, I think, escalate more than anything and may put us on a difficult path in the future.
Yeah, Jonathan, Audrey's mentioned the reliance on development aid there. What's happened with aid in COVID-19 in the year of 2020?
Well, fortunately, the Pacific has, if there's any silver lining to this, in the last few years, the Pacific has received a lot more attention from Western partners, and a lot of that has to do with China's growing influence in the region. But the Pacific has been well-placed to be on the radar for countries like Australia, New Zealand and others. So we haven't seen a dip, despite the severe, domestic fiscal challenges we're facing here in Australia. So that's, you know, if there's any silver lining, it's that, you know, the Pacific hasn't been forgotten about. But the reality is that the needs of the Pacific
need,
have been
absolutely
greater.
Yeah.
So, you know, for Australia, we're our aid to the Pacific is at all-time highs, but it's still not going to be enough. You know, everything needs to be on the table to help the region get through this. We don't have the luxury of fixing the problems here in Australia and then going to help fix the problems in the Pacific. The reality is we have so much more firepower at our disposal to you know, keep the Australian economy on life support, job seeker, job keeper, all the stimulus programs, you know, record deficits. We can borrow it so cheaply that it's almost free. The Pacific doesn't have all these luxuries. So we need to be keeping an eye, you know, doing everything we can to help our Pacific friends through this really, really trying time.
Audrey, whether it's Fiji or the Pacific generally, has there been a sort of COVID-appropriate influx of funding and aid this year? And if so, where's it come from?
Look, I think we've, as a region, have understood the challenges of the public health pandemic aspect of this, and had extensive support, of course, from many development partners to, one, to respond to the pandemic, and then that is part of that has been about strengthening our health systems. And we have quite weak and vulnerable health systems, and partners such as both New Zealand and Australia, the European Union, and of course, as far away countries such as France and others have really come to the region and are contributing, I have to say, significantly to not only strengthening of health systems, but also providing us with lots of support around medical supplies and equipment and so forth. So there's been a huge amount of quite a substantial movement in the region with supplies. The Pacific Humanitarian Pathway, which is really the initiative currently driven out of the Pacific Forum, where our leaders have really enabled, I suppose, the movement of and flow of services and support, allowing for diplomatic clearances to happen very quickly. These many partners have come to support this region, and it has been hugely welcomed and absolutely grateful for it.
Mm. Audrey, would you agree with the Calder Centre paper that Jonathan's co-authored, that Australia should increase its permanent intake of migrants from the Pacific Islands?
Well, I think it's a really really interesting topic, and I do think the policy brief and is welcomed, and I think it's timely, and it creates a space for a particular dialogue for, I suppose, addressing this issue of managed migration. And you know, I was really pleased to kind of skim through it and read it, because I thought this is fantastic that Australians are having this conversation with each other about this really important issue, what is their role in supporting both the humanitarian challenges in the region, but also what is their role in the region more broadly and, of course, in economic recovery. Look, this is a topic that I think our leaders have been debating for some time. There was no formal policy in the region around this, but I really do think, you know, the policy brief itself has created a space, I think, and a welcomed one to maybe to dig deeper and to think about these issues in a much more sort of policy cohesive way.
Jonathan, your paper cites the New Zealand's longstanding Pacific Access category. Could you explain for us briefly how that works?
Yeah, sure. So New Zealand for decades has run two programs of permanent migration to the Pacific, one exclusively to Samoa because of their colonial history with that country, another program with Tonga, Kiribati, Tuvalu and Fiji. And both these programs combined allow for about 1,700 Pacific Islanders to apply through a lottery system to come and get permanent residency in Australia and then eventual pathway to citizenship. Now, there are conditions around these programs. You have to have a health check, a minimum language education levels, and you have to have a guarantee of employment, so you're not going to be a drag on the state when you arrive in New Zealand. But, you know, every year the scheme is vastly oversubscribed. There's huge demand for it. And, 1,700 a year, not massive numbers, but over time these numbers can grow, and it's become a really important part of the fabric of the relationship between New Zealand and particularly the Polynesian states, Samoa and Tonga. So we're not advocating for anything radical here. We're just advocating Australia get on the page of other major partners with the Pacific. Australia the reality is Australia runs a discriminatory migration program against the Pacific through our skilled migration pathway. Pacific Islanders just simply can't get to that level of skill that Australia requires in the skilled migration pathway to be well represented. We have about 250,000 people of Pacific heritage living in Australia, but the majority of those have come from New Zealand because of those migration pathways to the region. So, again, not advocating for anything radical, just getting on the same page with the rest of the region. I think it's a bit of a no-brainer because it'll come at no cost to the taxpayer. These people will contribute to the Australian economy and have benefits back in the Pacific as well.
And we heard, Audrey, relatively optimistic that your paper might be sort of prompting a discussion and getting this issue on the radar in Australia. Do you get a sense that this issue is front of mind for the federal government? And are you optimistic, Jonathan, that there could be changes along those lines?
Well, look, we've come a long way on the migration discussion in Australia. It was only, you know, just 15 years ago that the Howard Downer government were basically saying no migration over my dead body, even in the seasonal workers space. We've since come around on the seasonal workers programs. We have more than 33,000 Pacific Islanders have in the last 15 years come to work and pick fruit in Australia horticulture and agriculture industries. You know, the incomes these people get are up to 8 to 10 times greater than what I earn back home. So it's, of course, huge benefits to the Islanders. The farms benefit because they're more productive than backpackers and other sources of labour. And, you know, it's, of course, benefits Australia's foreign policy interests in the region. So it's you know, a win-win. And so we've come a huge way in the seasonal space. And this is just the natural progression of this discussion. So, you know, if we had put this paper out 15 years ago, I would have thought it would go down like a lead balloon. But I think there's been, you know, this particularly in the era of COVID, as migration across into Australia is plummeting, you know, I think we've never seen greater bipartisan support for, or at least, you know, to at least have a conversation about Australia's interconnectedness and migration policies towards the Pacific.
And just finally, we've been focused obviously on migration and movement into Australia, but tourism obviously have been a hugely important part of the Fijian economy. Audrey, at the same time, preserving that COVID-free status is obviously very, very important. Do you get the sense that the Fijian community is at a stage now where it really does want to see tourists coming back, or is the premium still on remaining COVID-free?
Do you know, it's these conversations and discussions between governments in the region are continuing to evolve, and I guess their government-to-government communications need to take their rightful place. Fiji has a very strong health system. Their border control is in good shape. I think they'd be ready to engage more openly and forcefully with both New Zealand and Australia. Having our planes back in the sky, bringing the tourists back into Fiji, of course, would be a welcomed. It needs to happen, and we just hope it will be sooner rather than later.
Well, Audrey Almour, thank you so much for joining us today on Sunday Extra.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Audrey's the Deputy Director of the Pacific Community based in Fiji. But I noticed Audrey's also just been announced as the new CEO of the Fred Hollows Foundation New Zealand. So congratulations on the new role for 2021 as well, Audrey.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And thanks also to Jonathan Pryke, Director of the Lowy Institute's Pacific Islands Program. I believe, Jonathan, the word is on an ongoing basis in that role.
Yeah, that's right. I don't plan on going anywhere, but I have to say I'm desperate to get out to the Pacific. So once we can get these flights open again, I'll be on the first flight. But thanks very much for having me.
Fantastic. Thanks to you both.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.